I'm reading from Barbara Kingsolver's The Poisonwood Bible, page 241. This is a part of the things we didn't know, written from Leah's point of view. Ruth May's sickness stayed with her, but Mother kept pulling herself together. Seeing the two of them curled in the same bed, one slowly emerging and the other losing ground, put me back into familiar and pleasant thoughts of Ada and me in the womb. I have prayed 1,000 times for God to tell me, did I do that to Ada? If I showed her more kindness now, could I be forgiven for making her a cripple? But a depth of that size seems so impossible to pay back, it is a dread thing even to start on. Mother used her own reserves without stealing the life out of Ruth May or anyone else. She seemed to draw strength right out of the muggy air. Sometimes I saw her sit on the side of the bed for a while before getting up, drawing in deep breaths through thin, pursed lips. She had her good and bad phases, but finally stopped sleepwalking once and for all. It happened rather suddenly one day, after Rachel burned up an egg omelet. She burned 2 in a row, to be exact. She had the fire in the stove stoked up way too high. The only way to get a slow heat for baking bread or cooking a tender thing like an omelet is to build up a big fire first with good stout wood and then cook while the coals die slowly down. Rachel could never get the hang of that. She was trying to start the fire and cook all at once, which will never get you anywhere. You can't keep a new fire low. It must grow or die. Nelson taught me that. But Nelson had gone to get water before dark, so Rachel was trying to cook all alone. It was her day in charge of dinner, and she had failed to think ahead. Now I could hear her screaming vile things out there in the kitchen house. I went to investigate and let her know we were hungry. All hungry you, she yelled. Can't you see I've only got 2 hands? I could. She was using both of them to gouge at the burned skillet with a wooden spatula of Nelson's making. Her hair had come down from its French knot and stuck all over her face, and her good blouse was smeared with black ash. She looked like Cinderella in reverse, stepped out from her life at the ball for a day of misery among the ashes. Rachel looked up at me and clapped her left hand over her mouth. I turned around. There was Mother in the doorway behind me, holding up the spatula. Rachel, Mother said, I believed you dropped this. We stood frozen before the altar of a red-hot cook stove. Rachel took the spatula without a word. Rachel, sugar, let me tell you something. I understand you're miserable, but I'm afraid this is your penance for 16 years of pulling up your nose at my cooking. I want to see you bring that mess in here and serve it up to your father and all the rest of us, including yourself. And I want to see you clean your own plate, without one word. Tomorrow, I'll start teaching you how to cook. Mother kept her promise. She'd gotten up changed from her month in bed. For one thing, she was now inclined to say whatever was on her mind, right in front of God and everybody, even Father. She didn't speak to him directly. It was more like she was talking straight to God, or the air, or the lizards who paused halfway up the walls. And if Father should overhear her, that was his nickel. She declared she was taking us out of here as soon as she found the way to do it. She had even asked Eben Axelrod flat out if he would take us. Not at the moment, was his reply, since he'd probably get shot down over Leopoldville with a plane load of white ladies, and he didn't want to make that kind of headlines. But on another day, he came back smiling sideways and confided to Mama that every man has his price. From the looks of Mama, she means to pay it. I was shocked and frightened to see her flout Father's authority, but truthfully, I could feel something similar moving around in my own heart. For the first time in my life, I doubted his judgment. He'd made us stay here, when everybody from Nelson to the King of Belgium was saying white missionaries ought to go home. For us to be here now, each day, was Father's decision and his alone. Yet he wasn't providing for us, but only lashing out at us more and more. He wasn't able to protect Mother and Ruth May from getting sick. If it's all up to him to decide her fate, shouldn't protection be part of the bargain? I wanted to believe in him. We had much more of the Lord's work to do here, that was plain. And what better time to do it, Father told me reasonably on the plane coming back from Leopoldville, than in the festive atmosphere of independence, when all Congolese are free to learn from us and make their own choices. Father believes they will choose the Lord's infinite love, and us, of course, as we are God's special delegation to Kalanga. He says we're being brave and righteous. Bravery and righteousness, those are 2 things that cannot go unrewarded in the sight of the Lord. Father never doubts it, and I can see that for him it's true. He's lived all his days by the laws of Christ, standing up tall and starting to preach in tent revivals when he was hardly older than I am now. And for all that time, people flocked to his word and his wisdom. He was brave in the war, I'm sure, for he won a Purple Heart. For Father, the kingdom of the Lord is an uncomplicated place, where tall, handsome boys fight on the side that always wins. I suppose it resembles Kildare, Mississippi, where Father grew up and played the position of quarterback in high school. In that kind of a place, it is even all right for people to knock into each other hard every once in a while, in a sportsmanlike way, leaving a few bruises in the service of the final score. But where is a place for girls in that kingdom? The rules don't quite apply to us, nor protect us either. What do a girl's bravery and righteousness count for, unless she's also pretty? Just try being the smartest and most Christian 7th grade girl in Bethlehem, Georgia. Your classmates will smirk and call you a square, call you worse if you're Ada. All my life I've tried to set my shoes squarely into his footprints, believing if only I stayed close enough to him, those same clean, simple laws would rule my life as well, that the Lord would see my goodness and fill me with light. Yet with each passing day I find myself farther away. There's a great holy war going on in my Father's mind, in which we're meant to duck and run and obey orders and fight for all the right things, but I can't always make out the orders or even tell which side I'm on exactly. I'm not even allowed to carry a gun. I'm a girl. He has no inkling. If his decision to keep us here in the Congo wasn't right, then what else might he be wrong about? It has opened up in my heart a sickening world of doubts and possibilities, where before I had only faith in my Father and love for the Lord. Without that rock of certainty underfoot, the Congo is a fearsome place to have to sink or swim.